Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to another podcast, My African Moves. We are very honored to have special guests with us today. Maungo Craft, culture in a bottle. That's what's up. Today, we will be speaking to Bonolo Monthe and Olayemi Aganga. Please pay attention to every word they're saying because their journey has been amazing. If you can't hear correctly, click on the subtitles so that you can see, you can read what they're saying to understand better. Bonolo Monthe and Olayemi Aganga are the co-founders of Maungo Craft. Their journey started in 2017 at the farmer's market in Gaborone, Botswana. They craft indigenous fruits into amazing, unique preserves and sauce. Pay attention to their story and their journey and how they've won so many awards, 11 local awards, regional and international awards. They are a story to be reckoned with and an inspiration and motivation to all our entrepreneurs across the continent, that is Africa. Karibu.
Hi, guys. How are you doing?
Hi. How are you doing?
Good. You guys like your cold. Is it cold there?
Yes. It's interesting because Botswana is, you know, it's hot typically, but we're also a desert country, so winter is cold.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, great. So, guys, so tell me about your company.
Our company's name is Maungo Craft. We make jam, marmalade, sauce, and soon other food products using indigenous fruits from Botswana. So, morula, baobab. Basically, we take these fruits, which are otherwise known as orphan crops, and we're trying to reintegrate them into the food system. So, we make very, very unique jams, marmalades, and sauces that we're the only ones to make anywhere. Typically low to no sugar.
Okay.
It's called morula, which is M-O-R-U-L-A. Amarula is related to morula because amarula uses the same fruit as well.
Okay.
And just to add to what Yemi's saying is that we're known for our very unique flavor profile. So if it's done, we're not going to do it.
Yeah.
So for example, we'll have a jam which is the smoked morula, chilies, and ginger jam. It's a savory, low sugar jam.
Okay.
We'll have a grapefruit, morula, baobab, and edible gold. I mean, it's got the bling in that one, you know? So we're about making very unique flavor profiles. So this gives people an experience when they eat preserves.
Yeah,
I mean, on your Instagram, they look delicious. I haven't tasted them, but just the look, the visual, I love the visual. So the question I've been dying to just ask you guys, how did you guys get the endorsement of Martha Stewart?
Our girl MS. She lets us call her that.
Yeah. So, we were attending the Summertime Cuckoo show, I think it was 2 years ago now.
It was our first time there.
Can you type it on the site?
It's the Fancy Food Show. It's in New York.
It attracts about 31,000, you know, people, traffic and a lot of people come to your store to taste your product, to know what you're about, to see if you can, you know, they can buy from you.
Yeah.
And then...
Can I say something about that? Because it's very crazy how people come through and taste. You will get all kinds of people to come through.
Yeah.
You'll have buyers, you'll have other people who... You wouldn't even, you know, expect to see them there. So, I remember Chef Marcus Samuelson's wife came through actually as well at some point. She had a name tag with a Chinese name on it, so it was very confusing because I didn't know who she was. And I'm like, okay, who is this Ethiopian person with a Chinese name tag? And she's like, oh, my husband would love it. And I'm like, oh, okay, cool. That's really nice. Like, who's your husband? Marcus Emerson. I'm like, your husband has the same name as a famous chef. And she's like, he is a famous chef. But it's crazy because there's another famous chef that's also named Marcus Emerson. It took me a while to process it.
Yeah,
yeah.
His wife for real.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, he came along and then he also gave samples to directly met Marcus Hamilton and gave samples as well. But basically, but for Martha Stewart, Hannah, who was a writer for Martha Stewart Living, ended up at our store. I mean, listen, like, whenever we do a trade show, I mean, we are where the party is at because we're serving food, people get to eat, people get to taste, and you know, she stopped by our stall. She loved the story. She loved the flavors. And she was like, Martha Stewart is going to love this. And we were like, what? Yeah. What do you mean? Yeah. And then just to cut a long story short, basically, we ended up getting some samples to her and gifting her for her. I think it was her 17th birthday. And it was her birthday.
She loves twin. That's what I'm going to keep saying.
So the jams and marmalades ended up at Maine for her birthday celebration.
Yeah. Okay.
And then she just surprised us and sent us a picture of Martha holding it, and we went bonkers.
Right.
Let me
follow with this. So what has that endorsement done for your business? Has that helped you with sales or notoriety?
You know what I would actually say? For every step forward in business, there obviously there are challenges one has to overcome. But we started in 2017 from a farmer's market in Havaroni. And from there, we were actually very pleasantly surprised to be taken to the Summer Fancy Food Show. And then we looked for the ability to get facilities to be able to ramp up our production. And so since 2018, while we did get that endorsement of Martha Stewart in 2018, we didn't actually even release that picture to the public till 2019. Because we didn't actually have the ability in terms of production to meet demand at that stage.
Okay.
And then in 2019, we were supposed to go and take up residence in another facility, but the man who had it at the time was then planning on selling it. So it's actually only until December last year that we've actually now gotten a food production facility that we're working out the space in. So what it helped us with, that I would actually say that it really helped us with, was actually credibility.
Yeah.
Because as however this may sound, we as Africans may not always necessarily get the belief from our own support structures in terms of our validity of our own product. So what that picture actually did a lot for us is that it helped to give us credibility to a lot of parties who otherwise may have been very, very skeptical in terms of getting us to the point that we're at today. So I do definitely credit her for that credibility in terms of sales. We're also still very fortunate because a lot of parties in markets that we're expanding into now or looking to expand to now still haven't seen that picture yet, so we can still. We're definitely using the picture in life.
Right, absolutely, man. That's a dope picture. That's great marketing. Mm-hmm. So I love your slogan, putting culture in the bottle. Who came up with that?
I think how do we land on that one? Because I think the first one was, it's fruit and stuff. That's what we started, right?
Yeah.
It's fruit and stuff because it's natural products, no artificial preservatives. It's all very healthy stuff. But then because we're using indigenous foods and because we're using orphan crops, we thought to ourselves, we're actually finding a way to package our culture and put it in a bottle.
Yeah.
So then we're like, well, why don't we just sort of, you know, put it like that, like, hey, this is culture in a bottle. You're tasting our culture. And here we go. It's in a bottle. It's going to get kicky once you start making packets.
Yeah. And it's culture in a pouch, culture in a plastic. We'll have to figure that out later.
But basically, the big thing is that, like Amy said in the beginning, we're trying to reintegrate open crops back into the food system. Right, so we're re-educating people that, hey, you know, you can eat from your land and it is nutritious and you don't always have to eat whatever other foods you've been told you need to eat. There's food, like Murula has about 4 to 8 times more vitamin C than oranges, you know what I mean?
Oh, wow.
So already packing with vitamin C, and if you grow up in a society, and this is not just for Africa, but just as a continent, where we're told eat this, don't eat that. I mean, there's about 30 commercial crops that are rotating in the food system. What?
Right.
So we're saying more than 30 crops, guys.
Actually, I'll take that one step further. And I agree with everything she was saying just now. 500 years ago, I'm trying to quote, people had about 1,200 or so varieties of food that we were eating. Since then, because of the way global supply chains have worked, we started to do a lot of monocropping, which is great for efficiency, but horrible for crop diversity, and also, as it turns out, horrible for climate change. So if you actually look at the top 20 solutions for climate change, 8 of them have to do with food directly.
Right.
Then another 4 have to do with how we grow food in terms of land use.
Yeah.
So 12 of the top 20 solutions towards climate change deal with our foods and how we grow them. While a lot of people tend to think of climate change in terms of energy efficiency, a lot of climate change actually has to do with food and the fact that we've now lost touch with these so-called orphan crops, which tend to be the indigenous crops of the various lands that we're in. So what we want to do with putting culture in the bottle is find a way of popularizing these crops to reintegrate them into the food system.
Oh.
So,
man, that was deep, man. You sound like a food scientist.
I'm looking for an honorary degree some point in life.
So, what did you guys do prior to starting this business? What is your background?
Ooh, wow. Several things, but one of them was that I worked for a recruitment agency, one of the top recruitment agencies here, where we also did psychometric assessments. And then after that, I then started my own online business, where I was doing a lot of content writing along those lines, voiceovers. And then, when Yemi came to me with a great idea, because this is a man right here. He's the one. Right? This tree grew right in front of his house. Like, this fruit is amazing. I mean, that's why I think, you know, indigenous fruits are amazing because they understand the land that they operate in, right?
Yeah.
And it grows in abundance, but because it grows in abundance and people don't really take it seriously because it's for men, but it also makes like elephants and monkeys a bit drunk, by the way.
Right.
So basically the tree was in front of his house and he had like a whole recent moment and he came to me and he said, hey, here's something I'm working on, let's try it out. But so when he found me, I was running my online business. That's my background.
I was just watching Black AF.
On Netflix.
And the wife on the show is always referring to herself as an attorney. I have not been an attorney in the past 3 years, so I'm wondering why she could be like, I'm an attorney. 20 years from now, I was like, you have not been in the courtroom in a while. I'm an attorney. I have a master's in intellectual property law. And so for me, my deep interest has always been in terms of what can we do in terms of traditional knowledge to get traditional knowledge monetized. And when we came up with this business, it was the season for Murula and it was abundant, it was overflowing everywhere. And because of how, to an extent, we've been conditioned to think of culture, it has become something where people didn't necessarily see it as a benefit.
Okay.
It's kind of crazy because we've talked to experts who've come into the country and they're like, you guys have maybe $50 to $100 million worth of orchids in terms of these actual fruit that just falls on the floor and no one using. So we thought to ourselves, well, the most expensive part of jam is the fruit. And with a lot of jams, we'll typically find that they're 50 to 70% sugar. So because people aren't really using this fruit, we have the opportunity to inverse it, where there's majority fruit and less sugar.
Oh.
And that's why we first started with just fruit and stuff.
That's a genius. That was a genius idea.
And that's how an attorney and somebody who's doing HR and recruitment to start a food
business. Yeah.
that's a genius combination.
Yeah, that's a good combination. Yeah.
Speaking of which, because of how awesome this woman is, she actually spoke about the need to integrate orphan crops at the AU headquarters in Ethiopia last year.
Really?
So I just wanted to check
that out.
Oh, wow. You got to talk about that. Come on now. We can't just...
I'm sorry. Yeah. I put her on the spot a lot. Right?
Yeah, you got to talk about that. I'm sorry.
So,
you guys can totally keep them. I'm so over here. Oh, yeah. It was a combination of things to get us there. So basically, we participated in a competition last year called the Go-Getters Agri-Premier Competition.
Right,
and
right.
By the billionaire Strive Makiwa and Yara International. So basically, it was like 3,000 companies entered, and then, you know, after getting, pitching, what have you not, it was the winners, like one female and one male, and I was representing our company, so we won our rap.
Oh, wow.
Which was pretty insane. I mean, it was literally insane. I remember we were sitting there, and Strive was like right there in person, like we were seeing on Facebook.
Right.
Yes, talking to him, like, oh,
that's crazy.
What happened? But then that took place. It was
massive. I literally, because I was actually in Botswana at the time. She was in Ghana representing the company at the time. So by the time I heard about it, I literally got, because it was dark, it was night. I got out of the house. I started running around the neighborhood, and I was running so far, and I was like, oh, I can get robbed. And then I had to run back. Because I'm like, I've gone too far. Too fast. I'm not thinking about this.
So, I was like, after you just want to die.
Yeah.
And then the founder got invited to speak at or to the design theory exchange in Norway, where we did speak about how, you know, a climate change, food systems, food security, what have you not. So we had a stall there, we spoke there. And then from there's a lady and Vanessa, and I think it was through, I forget the organization, but anyway, then she saw us speaking on stage, from SheTrade, and then she invited me over to speak at SheTrade at the AU to inspire other women and other agripreneurs who are, you know, in business and just like, you know, figuring it out, because we're all just figuring it out. We don't have everything. I mean, Royce, you know how it is. It's
just, work,
we're all just trying to make it work, you know?
Yeah.
That's how I got on an AU stage. And you know how sometimes you're sitting by the desk and they put the country name there, and then sometimes if you want like a different thing, you get earphones.
Right. That's real official, real diplomatic.
Don't do it.
Man, that's amazing. So with the Go-Getters competition, I read you guys won $50,000. Is that true?
Yeah.
Okay.
They've been amazing. One of the competitions is that we were doing called for it, and it was really surreal, but they really followed through. Yeah. And actually they have another cohort for this year. So yes. I think on the 19th of June they closed, so that, you know, just for the next winners to be to pay to see what happened. But supportive. I mean, even after winning, you know, they check up on us, and often Strive talks about us on his platform. Mm-hmm. Go-Getters, they talk about us on their platform. And we've also helped work with other entrepreneurs who are looking to enter this year to see how we can, you know, give them tips on what to do and how to do it, just to support them as well.
Right.
And that funding has actually done a lot for us as well.
Yeah, the funding is actually the reason why it was possible for us to finally get our own factory space, because as a startup business, you know, it's so expensive to get into.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? Those are one of the stumbling blocks that make it harder to get started. It really helps us to start with our equipment, we need our place, and just get things moving.
Right, absolutely. Okay. So with that competition, were you guys selected or you guys entered this Go-Getters competition? How did that come about?
We entered.
Okay, you went. Okay.
I was so, I was like, no, I'm done with competition.
Yeah, yeah.
And you was like, I'm so
glad I was doing. You know what? It was very, very necessary because obviously not access to capital is a major issue for a lot of African companies.
Right.
And at the time, you know, the real question was, how are we going to financially get into this industry,
right,
while we have, you know, whether Marcus Stewart liked it or not, or whether this was happening or not, we were having issues in terms of how can we actually scale our production and get into a factory space. And so at that stage, you're just like, well, 50,000 go-getters. And I have to be honest, I looked and I'm like, this competition is spelled with a Z in the end. You know, and that was the first thought I had to myself. I'm like, you know what? Hopefully this does not end up in a human trafficking situation. I'm very, very, very grateful. I'm very much grateful.
Right.
I was very, very grateful that you did enter, and I'm very, very happy with the outcome, not just in the sense of the actual funding aspect, but in terms of how much they have done in terms of trying to get us in different platforms, working with us in various ways. It's definitely been one of the most worthwhile competitions because there are a lot of competitions out there.
Okay.
We've won 11 competitions in terms of our space.
Okay.
But even in those 11 that we've won, they don't always have this kind of follow through and platform to go get it.
Okay.
It's been the best platform that I've seen so far.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's amazing. So speaking of your products, how many products do you guys have on your platform?
Okay, well, I gave that look for a reason. You know what it is, and this in part speaks to COVID-19 in part, because we have some jams that we have, and we have some marmalades that we have, but during that lockdown phase, because of supply chain issues and also what's happening in the world economically with a lot of people, and also with the virus, we want to say to ourselves, how can we innovate first, right? And what can we do to be more efficient in terms of our production?
Okay.
So we have what I'd say are three jams. One marmalade and a sauce, right?
Okay.
So three jams, one marmalade, and a sauce.
Yes, we're launching the sauce.
Okay.
So we're about to launch the sauce. I mean, we've done like a soft launch, but we're about to launch it. Like do a whole thing about it. Yeah.
So it's going to be the first Lula based sauce anywhere in the world.
Oh, wow.
You want to recognize it in terms of, you know, using that fruit as a sauce flavor.
Yeah.
And
taste, I mean, listen, I know we made it, but it tastes so good.
Yeah.
It's so good. Yeah.
We literally don't use any other sauce but ours right now. And it's really bad because when we run out, we're just kind of like, is it wrong?
Some more up.
We enjoy it.
That's crazy.
Two more products that
we can't get into
right now.
Yeah.
But if you follow our page, you're gonna see them. It's really exciting. It's all about like Jamie said, we're all about innovation. Like, what can we do differently? How can we be quirky? How can we do something that hasn't been done before?
Yeah.
That's our whole. How can we make it special? How can we make it different?
And still put culture in the bottle.
And still put culture in a bottle.
Yeah. That was dope.
Or a pouch.
Yeah, or a packet.
That's dope. What stood out to me with your guys' product is the originality, the creativity of your packaging. Is just it spoke a lot, you know, everything, just your story. I mean, I love a product that has a story, and you guys have a backstory that's amazing, and yeah, I think that's awesome. So are you guys exporting currently or have plans to export your products to other markets?
We have plans to export our products to other markets. And this is actually the funny thing about it. Summer Fancy Food Show 2018, we were basically in talks with Whole Foods from 2018 export milk to Whole Foods, but we didn't have the facility to do it. Mm-hmm. And now that we're getting ourselves in that position, we're talking with other distribution partners to export to the United States, and we're trying to see what we can do to get it across Southern Africa. So right now we're working out getting the right equipment to be able to do it at the scale and capacity we're looking to do it at.
Right.
So that should be coming in, let me not say shortly, I don't know how things work currently.
I understand. All right, so you kind of touched on it briefly. So speaking of COVID-19, how has that impacted your business, and how have you guys pivoted to kind of sustain everything?
I love the fact that like you could always pivot because, you know, some people are not thinking about that word pivot or what to do because people are stuck. Listen, COVID-19 is a very scary space. We've never really been here before. Actually, we haven't been here before. And do you know what I mean? Like,
right, absolutely.
For us as a business, a lot of our clientele was around the hospitality space.
Yes.
So because we have such unique products, we sold a lot to a lot of hotels, luxury camps. You know those nice hotels and camps you see on the television? You know those nice ones? Those are
right. Right.
That's where you would have found.
Those fancy places.
Yeah. And then for tourism, you know, the sector got heavily affected. I mean, across the entire world, and you know, borders closing down. So we were really affected. Like, we pretty much lost, I would say, 95% of our clientele because of that, you know. And then just to say that, and that's what, you know, as a business, you have to either go, okay, well, that happened, now what? Or do you stay and wait it out and what have you? And that's never really been our style. It is almost sort of like, if something goes down, okay, we see something's gone down, what are we going to do about it?
Right.
And it was uncomfortable, but we had to get creative, and that's how we started formulating new product ideas, and that's how we came up with the Source during this time and the other products. We took the time to create product formulation that probably wouldn't have taken place for a year or 2 years because we're just so, you know, busy with the grind.
As to what she was saying, because just even say what the strategy was at first, to be safe, because with the products that we're making, they were very mastiche to niche.
Okay.
And because of the niches they were in, what we were thinking was that if one looks at, let's just say, the retail store, right? You have 200, 300 options in a retail store. You'll walk in wanting toilet paper, you'll leave with 50 other things you never plan on leaving.
Right, right.
But the plan of the hospitality industry was, you know, across Southern Africa, you'd find that quite often tourists come to, let's just say, a country like Botswana, and they say, I don't have something that I can leave with that will be typically, you know, reminiscent of Botswana. Mm-hmm. So what we're thinking is that with the hospitality industry, we can obviously sell the jams to them, and that would be income for us. But they don't have that many options in terms of their shelf space either. So by the time they have their customers, you know, the tourists eat it, it becomes a lot easier for them to go and say, wow, I like that, I tried it, and now I bought it. So in some senses, we'd actually get paid for customer conversion in doing it that way.
Right, right.
The issue then became, well, this seems like a very good model for hospitality, but then when hospitality goes away suddenly, it doesn't feel like that great a model anymore. But we've come and we've pivoted with a lot of product formulation that we wouldn't have actually reached in a year's time.
100%. Yeah. And now we're going to go more online. So we're now available on the online platform skymart.co.bw. But now we're looking to, you know, reach out to other online platforms so that we're more just, our online presence is just more real, more there, more available. And even if we go, when we go to the US, we'll likely be available online first, but probably, I don't know, who knows.
Okay.
That's the pivoting that we had to do. Okay, well, now you have to find different customers, and you have to now change the way you communicate to your customers, and now you have to find a creative way to get to your customers.
And so, supply chains. And we supply also chains. Now have to figure out supply chain-wise how we can be able to produce in a more efficient way, because you know, you can't necessarily always rely on borders to be able to get X, Y, or Z.
Exactly.
You have to also work that out as well.
Yeah, that's been a tricky one.
I was gonna ask you that. So with you guys being in lockdown, has that kind of hindered you from getting your source products from your vendors?
Yes. It'll always be painful before it gets better. What this situation has shown us, and this is actually partially what COVID-19 does, for products that, you know, use raw ingredients to make a finished product, you then have to now start shifting some of your supply chains locally. And where you can find that maybe it isn't grown locally, while that's a pain point in the short term, it's an opportunity in the middle to the long term. So it's a pain point for us definitely right now. Within a year to 2 years' time, you might be glad that we did it, to be honest. So That's where we currently are with that.
And actually, I love that you said that. That's what's so exciting about that. The lockdown has made people realize that, because we have quite a huge import bill as a country. So now it's a case of how can we relook at that so that we're buying more local, you know, and the supply chains are within the country. So that's been the exciting thing, is that people are like going, well, I might as well go get a, you know, get farming going and let me grow XYZ or garlic or whatever it is. You know, things you take for granted. You send it to a shop, it's there anytime, all the time. And now, and I mean, we had to reformulate the new product because we couldn't get a certain type of chili.
Yeah.
So we're like, oh, darn it, we just made you.
It was fun at first.
Yeah. It's really exciting for the local industry that, you know, there's an opportunity in everything. Yes, it's a sad time, of course. It's, you know, people are dying. It's a scary time. Yeah. People are getting sick. But at the same time, you know, the yin and the yang, really, there's a lot of opportunity there.
Right.
Presenting itself.
Yeah,
100%. Right? Exactly. Right. Taking a negative and making it positive, right?
Yeah. So for us, COVID-19 was a bit of both. Darn it, we've lost our customers that have been brilliant, and we're gonna wait it out with them, because, you know, when the tourism industry eventually comes back, you know, we check on each other. But at the same time, we've now sort of seen the opportunity that's gonna help us, our business doesn't die.
Yeah.
So, and it was a bit of a blessing in that it gave us a moment to just pause, re-strategize, rethink. Breathe and not
doing
the grind every single day.
Right. Yeah. Man, that's awesome. I mean, you guys sound like a great team. I've actually, you know, I'm going to take some notes. I mean, I love your energy. I mean, you guys have a great
Thank you. Thank you.
I love it. It's contagious. It's contagious. So just kind of switching gears, how do you guys relax? I mean, I know you guys are running your business. How do you guys unwind and decompress?
We actually relax. That may not be.
That's kind of a next question. This is one of those really interesting questions, because people talk about balance, right?
Right.
You have balance, work life balance. So when you're a startup, talking about Jimmy, like
right.
We definitely work more than we play, because there's so much to do. There's so much to do, and we're not just driven by the fact that we're, you know, trying to create awesome products and reintegrate open calls. We're also trying to see, you want to grow so that we can hire people and create jobs and, you know, play a role in diversifying the economy. It's like you're going to war, but not really. Like,
oh, no, we are going to war.
It's war, right?
It's war.
It is war. So, I mean, once in a while, it's watching like Netflix, because you need to unwind. And, but honestly, we work more than we play. Like,
I feel you.
She, in her spare time, she not only, well, she works in the company, but in her spare time, she's also a member of She Trades. Chapter here in Botswana, which just started recently.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And he's a member of the National Products Association of Botswana, which is something also, you know,
trying to grow and become something. So, in many senses, what we really want to have happen, because this is a feeling that we both have, when it comes to natural and indigenous assets and resources in Botswana, we honestly think that this could be a real contributor to the economy. And it hasn't been up until this point. So we almost feel driven to go and make sure that happens.
Okay.
Because at this current stage, when it comes to visibility for using natural and indigenous products, for better or worse, our company is really up there right now when it comes to the country. And so it's the responsibility to make sure that this happens, not just for us, but it happens so there's an industry. So that by the time everything is said and done, you have companies, local companies all over the place making money and actually contributing to local communities.
Right.
And so by the time we're old, we can say, you know, like, yeah, we started this.
Right. That's
kids have no respect.
Yeah. So
yeah.
You guys are definitely on your way. You're definitely on your way.
for sure.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. So how can people keep in touch with you guys and follow your journey? What's your handles on social media?
So on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram, it's just at Maungo Craft Jam. Okay. Maungo is M-A-U-N-G-O Craft Jam. That's it. We're easy to find. We will get back to you. We love interacting. We're also doing a really cool thing lately where we're telling African stories that are not always told.
I saw that. I saw. I'm glad you brought it up. So talk about that. Okay. I get to talk to you guys forever. Yeah, I saw that.
You saw the animation. What did you think of it?
I loved it. I loved it. I was totally engaged with it. Yeah, that was dope. So you guys did who came up with that concept? Who came up with that idea? That was spot on. That was very entertaining. I enjoyed it.
Thank you so much. Yeah, no, definitely. It's because there's a certain narrative that's painted about Africa continuously through news and news cycles and it's passed down generationally. And we're like, enough is enough. We have stories of great people who have, been a place of power, have run the country. Like the first story we told was the story of Timbuktu. But do you know who Timbuktu is?
Do you know what she did?
Exactly. And so kind of saying, let's tell those stories that we need to hear. The younger generation needs to hear. So that we can actually remember and be reprogrammed into remembering the fact that we are great.
Right.
Greatness flowing through our veins.
Right.
And that we need as Africans. Just remember that. So when we were creating that, it was just so much fun because we felt like we were carving out a piece of history that isn't always told the way it should.
Right.
And we're so lucky for the parties we worked with. If you especially see, I love the story of Buktu and the Home of Mankind story, the way that was animated. Those guys did such an amazing job. The narrative there did such an amazing job. I feel like I'm doing Emmy Award shout outs.
It was up there. I mean, the quality, it was up there. I mean, seriously, I'm not just saying that. It was A1. It was great quality.
Local Africans in the industry to see what's happening here. So we worked with local animation company for one of them. And then we got a musician. The animation company is called, we're on a first name basis.
Yes, we're about to mess this one up.
Folklore animation. They were the level of talent. And then we worked with a voice animator who's actually one of our great friends. She recorded over for it, and then we worked with the Native. They're a band in Ghana. They play live music. They play folk music. It's just authentic.
It was so rich and educational. I loved it. I loved it. What's the plan for that? I mean, you guys definitely need to push that. I mean, I love that. I think the world needs to see that. That was great stuff.
100%.
Thank you.
We plan on pushing that. So by the time that we're available in the U.S., that will be part of the nature of our advertising there as well. We're not out here trying to depict the continent in light of poverty or famine or anything of that nature.
Right.
So it's going to be simply almost a Garden of Eden narration to depict and to show that our fruits, that our land is rich, that this land is a rich land, that people come from a rich land.
Right.
That's simple.
Right.
In a lot of senses, but the stories we're going to be telling, we're going to be telling stories of great Africans who have existed through history. We're going to be telling the story of the fruits themselves going forward as well. So people get to understand and be educated about the fruits. So that aspect of our advertising will almost entirely be devoid of product. We are going to advertise products as well, but that aspect of advertising will be just about advertising the country, advertising the continent, and demonstrating and displaying its richness and greatness.
I love it.
We need to tell the stories. If we don't stand up as the youth and tell the stories, who are we looking to? It's honestly our responsibility. And that's what drives us as a company. It's our responsibility.
Right.
It's easy to be like, you know what? let's just let that person in that corner handle it because we have the finances, the means, the ability to learn. We're choosing to participate in changing history, and we want to bring people along with us so that we can create a different narrative for the continent. This is so important.
Right. And there are many great stories like that to tell. It's actually kind of funny. Well, if you actually look at what Jack Daniels did, a lot of people looked at Tennessee and they looked at Tennessee as a place where they said, you know, this is a section of the country where there isn't that much money right now. Jack Daniels went and said they're going to control the narrative and they're going to show Tennessee in terms of its cowboy richness in their view. And that's something which it's about how you view the place and how you view things. And so for us, we view the continent in the way that you've seen it so far. And we're going to change the field that way as well.
Man, that's powerful. That's powerful stuff. Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up because I saw that on your page. I was like, man, that was really good. I was like, we need more content like that. I'm in the U.S. and we don't see that depiction of Africa. Like you said, it's always the worst images. So I think we need to control our narrative and see more stories like that. So I commend you guys for doing that and continue doing that and, you know, sharing that with the world. So, yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Well, guys, you guys have been great. Thank you for your time. And, you know, I love to, once these borders open back up, me and Mercy are definitely taking a trip to Botswana. Gonna try some of your jam.
We see you, Mercy.
Do a shout out for Mercy. Like, yes. We see what you do.
Yes.
She is an inspiration.
Yes.
Like, we've been following her on social media.
We see you.
Yes. Yes. Thank you.
That's dope. Yeah.
But thank you both so much. This has been wonderful.
Yes, you guys are great. It's great. Thank you. All right, well, guys, thank you. Enjoy your day. Stay warm.
It's usually hot here, though. Like 8 to 9 months of the year.
That's crazy. Thank you.